Hello and welcome back to Back to the Ring. It's been a long time, folks. I, of course, am your host, the one and only, the Dr. B.O.B., and with me this week is the consigliere of the office of Dr. Bob, our practices attorney, the one, the only, Rob the lawyer. How are you, Rob?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good, all things considered. I'm doing all right. Had a rough start to the morning as I celebrated my vaccine shot on Tuesday by drinking a whole bunch of beers last night and then getting up really late today. So it was a slow move to the beginning of the day. But all in all, everything's all right. We took a trip out to Washington State. That's why we've been so delayed in getting back. But it was fun. I got to see the big rock from the Goonies, where the One-Eyed Willie's ship was. So that was fun. Yeah, it was a good time. So all in all things considered, doing very well. How about yourself? Anything new in the world of Rob?
No, just work. That's my life.
Welcome to being an adult. That's what it is.
Yep. I wish I could find a way to reverse that, but you know, I'm stuck with it.
Well, this week we have Survivor Series 99, which I'm going to tell you, it's in Detroit. JR and Jerry Lawler are the announcers, of course. When we got the opening package for the main event Triple Threat, I was kind of excited. You know, I was like, oh, Stone Cold, Triple H, The Rock, and a Triple Threat. Like, I know there's going to be a bunch of outside fighting on the outside of the ring and all that, but I was like, at least these are three big names, and I'm like, ooh, who's going to win, you know? And, of course, later on, we find out about the disappointment in that Triple Threat. I mean, I got to think you were thinking the same thing as soon as it came up. You had to be like, oh, well, this is...
I mean, I remembered, though, this was the pay-per-view where Austin was taken out. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't remember if it was because of the car or if there's some other reason. But I just, in my mind, I remembered this was the time where Austin wasn't in the main event for whatever reason. And then as the night went on, I was like, yep, this is the hit and run, which made no logical sense. But after watching it a second time, which this was my second time watching it, mm-hmm. I realized they actually kind of hinted that it was Rikishi. I mean, it was a really bad hint. Yeah. And I don't know if the King meant it. I think he meant it more as a blonde joke, but he, you know, I mean, Rikishi is blonde.
Yep.
So, I mean, they kind of hinted that it was him. But, I mean, we'll talk about it more when the, you know, as we go through the pay-per-view. But none of it ever made sense to me. And I hate it. And I hated myself for watching it again and trying to actually this time be like spotting the clues if there was any. There wasn't. There was that one throwaway line by Jerry that was, you know, probably incidental. It was like when Heenan says, is he the third man? It's like, you know, wasn't a hint. It was just an honest question.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing about that. It will, this is the second pay-per-view that we've done where they've somehow gotten Steve Austin out of the building.
Yep.
Because the Deadly Games pay-per-view, they did the exact same thing, remember? They got him, he chased after the limo. Because didn't that limo hit somebody or something? I forget what happened. He thought McMahon was in the limo. I don't remember now, but it was...
I don't remember. The only thing I remember with limos these days is that one blew up with Vince in it and people thought it was real.
Oh, you sweet summer children.
Yep.
Wait, I would have been one of those people. Well, I wouldn't have thought it was real there.
Yeah, you would have. But you were, I don't think you were watching at the time.
No, maybe. I wasn't. I no. That was during my hiatus when I was too cool for professional wrestling.
No one is too cool for professional wrestling.
Oh yeah, they're all just faking it.
Yeah.
Just like everybody who's trying to defend Chris Jericho beating Cesaro for a meaningless title. We'll get into
at the rate he's going, he's gonna be one of those like reverse champions. You know how like Angle and AJ are the only two to be TNA champions and world champions and mm-hmm. Japan champions. Somehow Jericho will win the TNA title too, and he'll have done the reverse of AJ and Kurt.
Yeah, he'll have.
Oh no, he's gonna win the IWGP, right? I don't think he's been IWGP champ.
No, I don't think he has. He challenged for it, I believe, but that was it.
Yeah, as the pain maker or whatever he was.
Oh yeah, the the nap taker.
Yeah. Oh.
That's what I started calling him after he had that dramatic fall onto the crash pad covered in cardboard.
Oh yes, that's a fitting nickname.
The nap taker. But
oh, like I got a lot to say about his match tonight with China too. That was. I don't know what was going on there.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that first match. Actually, I kind of enjoyed Godfather, D'Lo and the Headbangers versus the Dudleys and the APA. Of course, King was losing his mind.
Yep.
You know, because of the Ho Train.
Yep.
Godfather does his little spiel in there. But I thought it was cool. All of the other
Godfather was over.
What was that?
Godfather was over. I forgot how many people actually chanted with him.
Oh yeah, he was super over. Like that was the most over gimmick that he did. I mean, people bring up Papa Shango all the time, but that was Pop. He was never that character was never as over as the Godfather was.
No. You know, I took a different approach to this pay-per-view, by the way. I didn't really, like, I watched the matches. I tried to come up with, like, my thoughts on them, but some of them were just really, like, just full-out brawls, and you can't really, you know, comment on the wrestling story.
Oh, yeah.
But for this one, I just found myself completely wondering, like, how did we get to this character with the Godfather? We went from Papa Shango, which is, you know, we can dismiss him completely because that wasn't, like, he wasn't Kama. He comes in, you know, he's Kama the Ultimate Fighter Machine or whatever. I can't remember what his nickname was.
Yeah.
Ultimate Fighting Machine.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
He joins the nation. He's still Kama. Somehow he becomes the Godfather of the nation. I don't remember how that happened. And then we get Godfather the Pimp.
Yeah.
And I have no idea how we got to this transition.
Your guess is as good as mine. I think the only person that could probably try to make an attempt to explain it would be
Godfather
or Shitstain, because I'm pretty sure that he's the one that came up with the idea to have the guy have the guy be a pimp and come out with a bunch of scantily clad women every week.
Yeah,
because that's right, that's right up Russo's alley. Actually, a lot of the stuff that happens in this pay-per-view is right up Russo's alley. So
it has Russo's stench written all over it. I mean, you can't get away from it. But the match was okay. I mean, I was more concerned with the character work in the beginning. Like, you bring in the Dudleys, people know them, and I know it's a new universe, and you know, like Vince likes to start fresh. But why do you go back to Bubba Ray's stutter? I mean, that was just a horror. I mean, maybe people who loved ECW at the time looked at it more fondly. But I know that's how he got his name. You know, he's Bubba Ray Dudley because he couldn't speak.
Yeah.
But why are we going back to it? Why? I mean, if you're the head writer, you're Vince Russo, you think going back to an idea is, I mean, it's not that you're going to change the outcome. It's just going to be like, hey, we're introducing this guy. It gave him
a tickle.
We're going to go nowhere with it.
I'm betting you the two Vinces thought it was fucking hilarious to make Bubba Ray stutter on purpose. They thought it was funny.
I guess.
So they, you know, they made him do it. And I'm sure that, you know, it's not like the Dudleys had a lot of other places to go.
I mean, they could have gone to WCW at the time.
Yeah, but there wasn't much left of WCW at this point. I mean, WCW was, what, 2 years away from over? Like,
Yeah.
Had they changed their logo yet again? Because I know they changed their logo right before everything went completely sideways.
I think so. I can't remember the time frame, but I know 99 was like one of its last hurrahs. But it was the last decent year good year, I guess.
There were some things in this match that I did really like. I liked everybody coming out in the pimp gear. I thought that was, you know, even if it's a little goofy, at least everybody kind of matches on the team. I don't know how to put that any better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it also kind of made sense for the Headbangers. I mean, my recollection of them was they were kind of a comedy team, which is why I was so surprised they got a lot of credible offense in.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were before they became the Headbangers on WWE, they were part of Smoky Mountain, I believe. And because they were from New Jersey, you know, and the whole like they were just two tough guys from New Jersey that liked heavy music. It really wasn't, you know, in Smoky Mountain, they weren't like a gimmick or anything. They were just tough guys that liked hard rock. You know, it wasn't until they got to, you know, Vince when they became, you know, wearing skirts and that whole deal. But
making funny faces and stuff like that.
But they're both really good wrestlers. That's the thing of it. And actually, everybody in this match were pretty good wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, Bubba was still really light on his feet. He hadn't started. I don't know what happened to him. You know, in a couple of years, it's like gravity affects him more than it did here because he won't come off the ground for nothing. I like JBL tagging himself in because he was frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, of course, we got to see the JBL Lariat, which it always looks impressive. That thing is just monstrous, you know. It's funny because you can tell some guys will purposely flip around upside down when they take a clothesline or a lariat. I don't think anybody was doing it on purpose with JBL. I just think he hit them that
momentum. Yeah. I mean, and if he didn't, he knew how to put it. He knew how to make it look hard.
Yeah.
I mean, that lariat was and is probably the best one I've seen live. I mean, I'm sure there are probably other ones, like maybe Stan Henson had a better one in person. I've only seen on video, and you know, you can't really get the full effect of it on a video. You have to watch it live to really see how devastating that move is.
Oh yeah.
And it's a simple move, but he knows how to throw it.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you know, simple moves done right are better than, you know, complicated moves that you fuck up.
Like the one Athena did on Dynamite. Oh, God.
Yeah, we'll get into AEW after we review the show because there's quite a few things I wanted to address there.
Okay, I'll let you handle that because after that match, I just zoned out. Like, I'm not watching that anymore.
Oh, yeah.
After I saw that
move,
I'm like, yeah, we're done.
Mosh eats a 3D and a pin, which looked good. I like JBL coming. I don't know why JBL came in and hit him with the chair, but he gets himself DQ'd.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. And I was also surprised by another thing. Like, I don't know if it was a timing issue, but he was causing distractions for his own team. Mm-hmm. Like, Farouk had a pin at one point, and Bradshaw was arguing with the ref.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that would make sense if Farouk was on the receiving end of the pin.
Yeah.
But instead, he came over, and I can't remember who he hit, and the ref's trying to bring him back, and Farouk guy's like the, I don't think he has a real three count, but he's got him down.
So, my best guess.
And then, you know, Bradshaw causes a distraction to fight for his team. I don't get what was going on there.
My best guess is Bradshaw did not like Bubba Ray and did not want to be in a match with him. And this was the most he was going to do in the match. You know, does that make sense? Like,
it does. I mean, I'm trying to also think, I know this was like fairly, obviously I think this was fairly in the beginning of their start of the WWE career.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing they still haven't had their match with the APA yet, or however they were supposed to go over. And maybe that was supposed to set up a feud or something so that they would make sense that they would get their tryouts.
I got the feeling.
Or maybe it was a continuation of it.
Yeah, I got a feeling with that. But I got the feeling that that's what it was, is the tension between the APA and the Dudley boys was, you know, the downfall of their team. The Bubba Ray gets a great power bomb off the top rope off, which looked fantastic.
Yeah.
But D'Lo ends up winning with a beautiful frog splash. And because it really was. That was a gorgeous looking frog splash that he hit.
And then had a good frog splash. This was always overlooked because he was doing it around the time of Eddie and RVD.
Mm-hmm. So Godfather and D'Lo Brown are the sole survivors. And they party with the Ho Train and the referee. Which
why not?
I mean, well, that's good. Good for him. That ref is no longer with us. So, and he was he was one of Andre's close personal friends too. So, but anyway, yeah, I gave it a B. I thought it was, you know, it was a good opening match. It wasn't, you know, I wouldn't go back and rewatch it a million times, but I was entertained.
I think it did a decent job getting the crowd fired up because you have all those personalities there that were actually, you know, real characters, I guess. So then the crowd seemed to be behind D'Lo a lot, and they really seemed to like the moves that were, you know, like they kind of popped for a lot of the moves. So it did a good job of warming up the crowd.
D'Lo was so over during this time period. Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, they were going crazy for him.
Because the last one we did, the SummerSlam, his match with Jeff Jarrett was like all the only time they cheered for Jeff Jarrett was when they were cheering for the his valet's tits.
Yeah.
You know, like they were all on D'Lo's side the whole time.
I mean, D'Lo, I don't get what happened to him. I mean, he was good in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
He was insanely popular. I mean, the only criticism I have of him is that I feel like his finishers should have been reversed in names because Sky High makes more sense as a frog splash and Low Down makes more sense as coming down from a powerbomb. So,
yeah.
But, you know, that's my only real criticism of him. He knows, he knew how to work. He knew how to tell a story in the ring. His moves always look good. I mean, yes, he had that one incident with draws and it's, you know, I don't want to downplay it because it was a serious incident. But that was more of a freak accident than anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why he wasn't used more effectively. Just put him in a mouthpiece and he would have been fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. But moving on, we get a Kurt Angle package, and which was pretty good. And then we get Kurt Angle's debut match, which I was not expecting on this pay-per-view.
No, neither did I.
Sean Stasiak versus Kurt Angle in his debut. It's weird not to hear the "you suck" chants.
Wrote the same note. It's literally the first thing I put here. Weird not hearing the "you suck" chants.
It took a while for the crowd to get into this because at one point they were chanting for the Red Wings.
Yeah.
So, it was a good showcase for Kurt Angle. I love the part where he took the mic in the middle of it and he's like, "You do not boo me. You do not boo an Olympic champion." I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was beautiful. That was good character work, which I thought was funny because it came maybe a minute or 2 minutes after the King starts going off about, yeah, Kurt Angle may be this great wrestler, but he's not a sports entertainer. He's not, I don't know if he's going to actually cut it here. And like, well, you couldn't have been more wrong going forward, but here in the match does a good job too.
Oh, Kurt Angle's one of the, I mean, and anybody in the business will tell you, King would even tell you too, in hindsight, that he picked up on everything faster than anybody ever has.
Yeah.
You know, except maybe, I mean, I don't know. Braun Breaker doesn't have the promo down, but Kurt Angle is never a great promo.
No, he just had good timing.
Yeah. Sean Stasiak even looked good here. And at the end of the day, Angle Slam finish, I gave it a B. You know, it wasn't a squash match per se because it was a little competitive, but it was definitely there to get Kurt Angle over as a big time competitor. So, and I thought that it did exactly that.
I wish he would use that Angle Slam more often, though. That version of the Angle Slam looked a lot more impressive than what he was doing in the middle and later of his career.
Oh, yeah.
I liked the full rotation on it. It looked a lot better. The one thing I liked also was JR in the middle of their mat wrestling where Angle's doing the fireman carry I'll call it a gator roll, but I don't know what you call it. Mm-hmm. And I know that's what it's called in like the SmackDown games when Luke Harper does it. It's called the gator roll. He's wrestling a style that's completely different from what we've been seeing. And I'm like, yeah, he's actually wrestling.
Yeah.
He's not punching or kicking. He's wrestling in the wrestling company. I mean, I thought that, I don't know if he was doing that as a jab to the WWE or if he was just trying to educate everybody.
I think it was.
I mean, it's like, to me, I burst out laughing. I'm like, yeah, JR, you're right. You're 100% right.
To me, I think it was a little bit of both. I think he was taking a little jab because at this point, you're right, there was very little wrestling, you know, hold for hold, you know, catch as catch can wrestling in the WWE period. Everything was punch, punch, kick, big move, punch, punch, kick, big move, you know, clothesline, you know, kip up, that sort of thing. There wasn't a whole lot of, you know, hammerlock, transition, headlock, head scissors, takedown, you know, anything like that wasn't really happening. So no. I think he was, and you know, JR coming out of, you know, Southern Territory Wrestling, that's what he liked. So of course he was going to draw attention to it anytime he saw something like that.
I will also note that this was the last time, at least that I noticed in the pay-per-view, where JR and King were actually calling the match and helping put it over the talent.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after this match, I know it was after the hit and run, it went downhill, and I was very tempted at times to mute the entire commentary. It was that bad at that point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, they went completely off the rails. But to be honest, they didn't. It's not like any of the competitors were giving them a whole lot to work with. I mean, for the most part, I think those were the best two matches in the whole damn pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Those first two matches. Everything else after this is...
went downhill.
Yeah. We get a VTR of DX attacking The Rock and Stone Cold. Then the next match, Val Venus, Dark Sexual Chocolate, Mark Henry, Gangrel, and Steve Blackman. What a weird fucking group of people. Versus the Bulldog, versus British Bulldog, and the Mean Street Posse. Again, a weird group of people. Why is Bulldog hanging out with the Mean Street Posse? This whole match made no sense to me when they announced the people coming out. I was like, what do any of these people have in common?
I think it's very telling that for the first time, that at least that we've been doing this, when, you know, we always make a comment about the video packages.
Yeah.
There were no video packages for any of these Survivor Series teams. There is no rhyme or reason for them to be there.
Yeah.
And I just didn't understand why they were a team. I tried to figure out, like, okay, who was feuding here? I mean, Bulldog's the European champion. Maybe Venus was going after that title, because I remember he might have been a champion at one point. Mm-hmm. I don't know why Blackman's there. I know Mark Henry isn't facing, you know, I know he was a European champion, but I think that was when, you know, D'Lo was doing that whole Eurocontinental thing. So I couldn't make any rhyme or reason as to what was going on. I don't know. I feel like this match was really just thrown together so that JR and King could come out and say and talk about the Survivor Series incident, because that's the only thing I remember from their commentary. They were going back and forth about, like, hey, you want to talk about Survivor Series when, you know, last time the Bulldog was in the WWE?
Yeah.
Or WWF, and I'm like, hey, that's the whole reason. There's no rhyme or reason for it.
I mean, yeah, it feels like
Bulldog was going to go on a tear and win.
It feels like sometimes when I'm having an LWF pay-per-view and I have a match, you know, I have an open match and I want to get some of the creator wrestlers on the card that aren't on the card, I'll kind of throw together like a tag match or something. This is what it feels like. It feels like they just threw together this group of people just to get them on the card and get them a payday. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I see it.
You know, but yeah, and also give them an excuse to talk about Bulldog and, you know, Bret Hart, because then that also, they can bring up the screw job too. And, so, but yeah, real quick, Blackman pins Pete Gass, Gangrel pins Rodney, Mark Henry pins Joey Abs, Bulldog ends up alone, Bulldog pins Gangrel, pins Steve Blackman, splash and a money shot by Val and Mark, and they win.
Yep.
Gave it a D-.
That's very generous.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you take away the whole Mean Street Posse and just start grading the match from when Bulldog wrestled.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that stood out to me is, I don't know if it was a botch or if it was meant to be, but when Henry catches Bulldog off the ropes and just basically lets Bulldog flip in the air and land on his, like, shoulder and neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that was, it was a, I hope that was planned. Because if I remember correctly, Bulldog was already dealing with so many nagging injuries that a mistake like that would have only made things worse.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
And I mean, that was the only thing I remember from this match.
on top of the injuries, Bulldog had substance abuse issues, which, as we know from watching Jeff Hardy over the years, the more injuries you have, the more prone you're going to be to those to issues like that, because you get prescribed painkillers and you use the painkillers as directed, but then you feel like you can't stop, and I forget who it was that was talking. They're like, you're never 100% when you're a wrestler, because you always have some sort of nagging little thing here or there that's going to hurt, or you're going to be in pain, you know what I
I
mean,
almost
from
want to say that was
something.
Angle who said that.
So, it is what it is. Let's see, we get Michael Cole in the
I will
women's
say this
locker
about the
room.
match. There was a logic to it. So I mean, Venus won with the finish. So I mean, it made sense. Like
I mean,
everybody on that team hit their finisher for the win. So I guess, logically it made sense with the match.
it wasn't insulting. You know what I mean? Like, yes, did the match having the match itself make any sense? Fuck no. Were the Mean Street Posse have any business in a wrestling ring? No. But all of that aside, at least from beginning to end, the match made sense. The Mean
Yeah, you
Street
didn't
Posse
have.
got the shit beat out of them like they should have. They all
Yes.
fucking went down pretty easily. Nobody got any real offense on any of the other guys. Bulldog pinned two guys pretty, almost in a row. And so, like, Bulldog looks good. Val and Mark looks good. Everybody else, who cares? Because Gangrel and Steve Blackman are just kind of hanging around anymore at this point. So, it is what it is. But
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It been a great Sunday night heat show.
yeah.
Not in the middle of your Survivor Series pay-per-view.
Yeah, well, if it had
But
been Val Venus and Mark Henry versus Bulldog and somebody else, it would have been a good match,
want
because
to
then
talk
you could have
insulting
actually
matches?
worked something. What?
An insulting match is the one we're going to get to right now.
Oh, God. Yeah. So before that match, we get Michael Cole in the women's locker room. The less said about that, the better. Okay, so the next match, another Survivor Series match, Mae Young and Moolah and Tori and Deborah, who comes out in freaking heels, mind
Yeah,
you, to a
because
wrestling match in
that's a wrestling match.
heels versus Jacqueline, Luna, Terry, who is also in heels, and Ivory.
Okay, I just want to say, did you call it the Survivor Series match? I thought it was a Survivor Series match
Oh,
too.
that's
The
right. It's
outcome
not.
obviously didn't say that. But when I saw them coming out in heels, I'm like, okay, this is Attitude Era evening gown match. What's going on here? Because this is making no sense. I had no idea what was going on. And God, the only thing I wrote in this match is, dear God, this match is bad.
I got mine was pretty short and sweet too. Jumpstart. We want Pumpy's chance. Only one team, because there's only one team that has real workers on this,
And it was the team that lost.
Yeah, and God love Mae Young. Moolah is what Moolah is, but they could work. So the only people who could actually work, who actually could put on a good match, were all on the same team, and they lost. There's a brawl after the match. The last thing I wrote was poor Jacqueline, Luna, and Ivory, because
Poor Ivory, like completely. She was the one who ate the pin.
And she was the champion too,
And
wasn't she?
I think so.
Yeah, she
Yeah,
was.
because they were celebrating with the title. I remember that the May and Moolah was celebrating as if they won the championship.
So,
Ugh.
yeah, this one got an F. If I could give it lower, it got an F minus.
I deliberately did not grade it or come up with anything for it because it was just insulting. I mean, you had two participants who didn't care enough to put on wrestling gear. You had you know, wrestlers that could actually legitimately wrestle, and we didn't even get a wrestling match. Like, I almost felt like maybe I was zoning out, but I honestly felt like this was one of those situations where I blinked and it was over. Mm-hmm. And I had to go back to it, rewind, and see how exactly Ivory got pinned. And then when I did that, I genuinely felt bad for her, because it wasn't like, you know, a super powerful move done by someone on the other team. I don't remember what it was at this point, but
Tori had given her finisher and Ivory had laid down for that, it would have made more sense. Because Tori is the only one on the babyface team. Well, or on the heel team. Are they the heel team or the, I don't know who the heel and who the baby faces are, but
I don't know who they are.
Tori was the only one on that team who had any ability. Like, and I'm not saying she had a ton, but you know, Ivory and Jacqueline and Luna have more ability combined in their little finger than Tori, I think, had in her whole body as far as wrestling goes. But
true. But at least Tori had a finish, you know, I mean, with the alley-oop bomb.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what the other people, I mean, even in the video games, they gave people like Deborah and Terry as their finisher a slap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on now.
And, well, I mean, I can't say anything about Deborah because I don't know much about her, but I know at least Terry respects the business itself.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. I think she came out in heels because nobody else had wrestling boots that would fit her. Honestly, that's my best guess. Oh, the only reason she didn't come out.
Probably.
In boots. But I mean, neither Deborah nor Terry really did anything in the match. They might as well been there.
They were just there.
They were there so that, Deborah could tear Terry's shirt off.
Yeah.
Which again, there's Vince Russo. There he is again. Adolescent fantasies. You know, it's a grown man with a wife and children, but boy, we gotta show a bra on pay per view, or people aren't gonna tune in. Anyway,
yeah, we give Russo a lot of crap, but I want to believe, based on the stories I also hear about, I don't know his name, Bucky Beaver, you know the guy I'm talking about.
Yeah. Kevin Dunn.
You know, you hear stories about how he felt like Becky wasn't attractive enough to be a superstar.
Oh no!
Based on that, I firmly believe that you had Russo, Bucky, and you know Vince McMahon all in the room saying, "Yeah, we need skin, we need bras, we need some, you know, we need some, you know, we need these things," and they were just like, you know, like nerdy little schoolboys gushing over this, you know, like looking at a Sears catalog and being like, "Oh, this is so hot."
Yeah.
And they were like, they were loving this.
Oh yeah. No. Kevin Dunn is a giant piece of shit. And I think pretty much everybody that's ever worked at WWE will tell you that.
Oh yeah. But he doesn't get a lot of, like, he doesn't get attacked a lot for this era. It's always focused on Russo, which is deservingly, but I think that you got to also remember that Kevin Dunn is probably the reason, you know, that this stuff, you know, was, you know, approved.
Yeah, he spent his whole life, he spent the majority of his adult life in the wrestling business, denying that he's in the wrestling business. So, you never have heard of someone who has so much disdain for the business that's made them so much money. Anyway, moving on. we get a backstage promo from X-Pac, and was it me or did he sound drunk or fucked up at some, like... He did not sound like a sober, hyped up individual for that match. Maybe it was just me.
You know, now that you say that, yes, I kind of see it. I wasn't really noticing it because in my mind, that's just how like X-Pac always presented himself a little bit.
Could be true too.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, when you say it, I kind of see it, or I kind of hear it now.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just. It's a little bit of both. Maybe he was still hungover from the night before, or you know, I mean, it could have been a myriad of things. But he didn't sound like completely coherent to me. But you know, then again, he is going into a match with Glenn Jacobs. So, and here we go next: X-Pac versus Kane.
Hated this match.
What was that?
Hated it.
Hated it?
Yeah.
Oh man, I gave it a C.
I hated it because of one major reason.
What was that?
Kane can throw uppercuts and X-Pac just bounces off as if nothing happens. But X-Pac hits a little kick and Kane sells it as if he was hit by an atomic bomb.
Oh.
You do not have your giant of a man going down to kicks when he can't even knock down X-Pac.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
I mean, the only time he finally got X-Pac to go off his feet was after the tilt-a-whirl backbreaker or the backbreaker he caught him on. And then after that, X-Pac was falling down to punches. But up until that point, Kane was throwing uppercuts, punches, and all it's doing is sending X-Pac backwards. But X-Pac hits a spin kick, and Kane goes to a knee. X-Pac hits a kick in the corner. Kane falls to his knee. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't know what the logic was. I don't know if Kane was injured. And I know you can't see me, but I'm doing air quotes here. But, I mean, I don't know what the reasoning was, but that took me out of the entire match. And I really wanted to like it because, you know, those were my, you know, DX and Kane were two of my favorite characters back in the Attitude days.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching this and I'm like, nope, this makes no sense. Get it over it. And I'm happy it was just, you know, I'm happy that, you know, DX came out to cause the DQ and set up a future story, you know, continue the story with them. But once they completely, you know, decided to flip the script and make Kane of the, like, the smaller wrestler, and I know he, you know, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah, I get you. Make Kane fight from underneath against X-Pac?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I didn't even catch that. Because it all, like, the thing about that match is like everything happened so fast. It was like, okay, we're having a match, and then all of a sudden, all this shit fucking happens, and it's over. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. What happened? It made sense. It was aggressive, and I liked the ending. I just don't like how it was. Whoever produced that needs to, you know, not produce any more matches because it didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
And that was my only. That's the reason I hated it. If they had flipped it and made it so that, you know, X-Pac was fighting from underneath and using devious tactics, because I guess he's supposed to be the heel there, that would have worked.
Yeah.
But the way it was, it made me feel bad for Kane. It made me feel bad for, it just made me feel bad for Kane. You know, X-Pac looks like a freaking superhero.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, this is part of the reason why he ended up getting go away heat, too, I think.
Yeah.
There was one really, really good spot that I wanted to talk about in this match, though, and that's when X-Pac goes for the Bronco Buster and Kane blocks it with the chokehold.
Oh, that was beautiful.
With the
that I liked
the choke that slam hold. I was like, this is like that was it, because it was perfectly timed. I mean, just absolutely perfect. X-Pac up in the air, and the next thing you know, Kane's got him by the throat. So yeah, but yeah, there was a lot. I'm not a huge fan. There was a lot of interference in this match too. There's a lot of interference in a lot of the matches in this on this pay-per-view too. That's another thing.
Oh yeah, that's always how it is.
Everybody's running in every freaking match. We get the Rock promo with Michael Cole in the back, and Triple H attacks the Rock. Next we get Albert, Midian, Mabel, Viscera, and the Boss Man versus the Big Show.
Of course, it was supposed to be the Big Show, Kai and Tai, and Blue Meanie for some reason.
Yeah, but he beat all of them up. So
yeah, I want to know how these teams are being selected, because at this point, I'm realizing it's just random.
Yeah,
there's no rhyme or reason.
Well, this was basically three guys the Big Show could conceivably run through, and the Boss. See, they should have given the Boss Man the Mean Street Posse.
That would have made sense.
So, you know, of course, you know, it, I guess we got to talk about the whole Big Show's dad dying, Boss Man dragging the casket off nonsense.
Yeah, they really hammered that home, which made me wonder, was the point of this feud to erase what WCW did? To make us realize that this is not the son of Andre, because they just really wanted to make it seem like, you know, like Big Show has a father, and you know, he's dead now, and he's not Andre. I just don't see why they went with it.
I don't know. It's very, very, very poor taste.
Yeah. But
then again, you know, Triple H had sex with the corpse, so
Yep.
Anyway, so basically it's chokeslam pin for Midian, Visser, and Albert in short order. And then Bossman gets himself intentionally counted out. So why even have this match on the card is my question. Like, why? I gave it a D.
Yeah, I was there for that. Like a D minus.
Yeah.
I mean, no one really had real offense. I didn't understand the reason for the match. Again, there was no really, I guess, justification for it other than to further the Big Show Bossman feud. But yeah, it was just,
which, given the ending of this pay per view, makes no sense.
Yeah.
No sense at all why you're going to continue that feud given what happens in the last match. Spoiler, folks, if you're paying attention. So then we go from that to, and this is where the whole pay-per-view as far as the commentary goes south. Stone Cold gets attacked by Triple H, starts trying to run after Triple H and gets hit by a car. Vince and company come to the scene. Who hit Austin? DX didn't do it. I wrote, was it Jerry and Pat?
What?
Was it Jerry Briscoe and Pat Patterson? Of course, we know it wasn't, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that happened. Of course, JR runs back there, and everybody just kind of stands around because, you know, there's nothing you can do. You know, the EMTs are loading him into the thing, and the EMTs don't even know how to strap the guy to the gurney properly. So,
nope.
Yeah, it was just.
I think one of them was BB, right? Wasn't Barbara Bush there doing the being one of the
I think so.
EMT workers? Yeah.
So, moving on for the Intercontinental Title, Jericho versus China with Miss Kitty. Why China needs a second in her. China, as the baby face, needs somebody in her corner. I have no clue. I always thought that was stupid. Baby faces don't need managers. They don't need valets. Unless they're up against a heel that has a manager or valet, and they're evening the odds. You said you had some things to say about this match. Did you not?
Yeah. And I don't want to be, I hate being negative about these old shows. I really do. But the best I can describe it as, they sold the moves as if they were getting hit by a Mack truck. But the effort they put into making those moves look real was almost non-existent. For example, when there's a sequence where Jericho is Irish ripped into the corner, mm-hmm. and he does that Ric Flair flip, yep. where he gets stuck into a tree of woe. For that to make sense in my mind, you need to have like all your force behind it, falling to the ground as you're whipping him in there. You know,
like a Bret Hart Irish whip.
Yes.
Yeah.
China just kind of. You know,
points him in that direction, and he goes and does it.
And he goes completely crazy. It was, to me, this match was like watching when Shawn Michaels sold for Hogan. Only both of them are doing it, and both of them are doing it for, you know, and you know they're not putting effort behind their moves. Like China's kicking Jericho, and it looks like he's getting kicked by Daniel Bryan, but the kicks are like, you know, like just, you know, like Orange Cassidy kicks, basically. I mean, they're better than that, but. You know, there's like no effort into them. Every move in that match was as if, you know, they were like selling as if they're Kurt Hennig, you know, getting, you know, bounced off the turnbuckle where he does that flip spot. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
But the moves that make them do these reactions aren't there. It's like they have ragdoll physics.
Yeah.
But they're not being, nothing is telling them to do that really. It's like I don't get it. And that was just so weird. It was like, did Jericho hate China? Did China hate Jericho? Were they just tired? Did they not like who was going to win? What was going on here? Because these, you know, Jericho is a great worker, especially around this time. China was putting in real effort, I believe, at this time. Like she wanted to be this I mean, I don't know. Maybe in her biography or something, she, you know, is says something differently. But in my mind, she wanted to be this, you know, main character.
So I have a little bit of insight into all this. Because I read Jericho's book, one of Jericho's books. And he actually talks about his feud with China and the whole them both being Intercontinental Champion and that whole, this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
So apparently at the very beginning of the Jericho China stuff, they had a match and Jericho was, you know, working her like, you know, you would one of the guys, because that's what he was told to do, because that's what China said she wanted. China got a black eye. China complained to Triple H. Triple H complained to Vince. Vince told Jericho to lay easy on China. And from that point on, they did not like each other, did not work well with each other.
Okay, then that makes perfect sense why they were doing this. They were trying to make it look good, but also, I guess, you know, I don't want to say sandbag, because that's definitely not the right word, but they were just not looking to put any real effort into the moves.
Yeah. They were,
I never knew that story.
Yeah. So
that,
they,
you know, in light of that, that makes perfect sense. It explains I don't want to say justifies, but explains why the match was happening like that.
Yep. Yeah, it really does. And so there's a couple of things. One, they spent way too long outside the ring in this match for me. I tuned out for a while in it. Jericho sexually assaults Kitty at one point by kissing her
without consent.
You know, without consent. Let's see. Jericho uses the belt. China kicks out of the belt. That's another thing. China kicked out of some stuff that, like, seriously. Finally, there's a Lobo Avalanche pedigree. China wins. I gave it a C because I knew the background behind it, and I thought that they still did an okay match, considering that Jericho basically couldn't lay anything in on China, and China wouldn't lay anything on him because China was never a great worker. You know, I mean, give her credit.
I mean, she tried. You know.
You know, for working with the guys and for all of that, breaking down that barrier. But she was never a particularly... No one looked at China and said, boy, she was a great wrestler. No, that's just, you know.
Yeah. I mean, she was good for the time, though.
Yes.
But, yeah, so, okay, that makes... I wish I would have known that going in, because my grade would probably be a little bit more lenient. Because I was ready to give that like a D just because of the illogical selling. But now that I know there's a back, you know, there's like, I guess we can say bad blood.
Yeah. Bad blood.
I think the fact that they were able to work really well, they worked really well with each other. So I'll go with a C.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they did their best to keep the crowd entertained, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they did. You know, I mean, they, of course, everybody, according to Jericho, everybody kind of patched things up later on, but,
Yeah,
they really did not. They didn't like each other. They didn't talk to each other. And of course, Triple H still, even at this point, had a lot of pull in the back and kind of had Vince's ear, because he was Sean's buddy and Sean wasn't really there. So anyway, so now we get a skit in the back with Shane and Triple H asking if it's a singles match now. And Shane says he'll ask his dad. Next, we get another Survivor Series match, the Hollies and Too Cool versus Edge and Christian and the Hardys. Let's see. I'll just run through this real quick. Scotty and Edge start out good. Scotty, Too Hottie, and Edge. Good opening to the match. Matt Hardy was really good in this match. I think a lot of us forget... I know I forget sometimes how good Matt Hardy actually was as just a pretty much ground-based professional wrestler. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
King, of course, King puts his son over the whole match. Grandmaster Sexy. Sex A. Sorry.
I like how he's acknowledging his, that it's his son.
Well, he didn't. He never acknowledged it the whole time, but he put him over. He talked about him the whole match, wanted to know where he was, what he was doing.
I feel like at one point, though, he did make reference that it was like his son. Maybe JR called him that.
JR made some sort of reference to it. It's like, oh, it's almost like you're talking about your son out there or something.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I'm getting caught in my head.
But
this must have been their first time as Too Cool or, you know, in the early.
I think this was, this is definitely their first, this is their first pay-per-view match as Too Cool.
Because it was weird not seeing them cheered. I thought, I was like, how are they not getting like a positive reaction?
Yep. But let's see, the heels work Christian over pretty good. There was a lot of breakdowns in this match where everybody was in the ring and everybody was doing everything. Of course, that's an Edge and Christian and Hardy Boys staple. So
I like that one spot with Brian Christopher where I can't remember who took it, but he goes for the sunset flip powerbomb onto the apron floor, and that was just a smooth.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I hate that spot because I think it's very risky, but I mean, he hit that perfect.
Oh, yeah.
It was fluid. It made it didn't look. It was as safe as it could be for that move. I mean, it was a chef's kiss. I mean, he beautiful. That was like the first that I would never probably say that again about that move because I hate the sunset flip bomb. But wow, good job.
Yeah, good job taking a move that that almost never looks good.
No, I mean it was perfect. I mean, you could not. The timing on it was wow. I mean, that was like my main takeaway from like my main memory of this pay-per-view is that move because it was just and I say that with the full admission that I can't remember who took the move, but I just remember seeing Brian Christopher do it and it was beautiful.
So let's see, anything else of note I have in here? Pretty much just the order everybody goes out. Holly rolls up Edge, Scotty rolls up Matt, Scotty gives the worm to Jeff Hardy, they work over Jeff for a while, Christian breaks up a pin. Everything breaks down. Jeff hits a 450 splash off the top and pins Scotty. Then Jeff gets pinned. Then Christian pins Grandmaster Sexy. Christian kicks out of everything. Hits an unprettier to pin Crash. Pins Crash, but then Bob Holly ends up winning. So Bob Holly is the Hardcore Holly, I'm sorry. Spark Plug Bob Holly is the sole survivor. For anybody out there who remembers Spark Plug.
I do. I actually liked Spark Plug. I liked them when they came with 1-2-3 Kid.
I was a huge racing fan, and Bob Holly is a good worker. Like,
yeah, he is. He really is. I mean, he got a bad rap because of what he did to whoever it was. Was it Pewter?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but I mean, he can work, and I was glad to see him get his his time in the spotlight as Hardcore Holly and as I guess in the later years of SmackDown when you had the SmackDown 6. I know he wasn't part of the SmackDown 6, but he was definitely well utilized back during that era.
Oh yeah. So I gave this one a D just because too much breaking down, too much nonsense.
Yeah,
everybody's hitting everybody with everything, especially towards the end of the match.
It was a good wake-up match, but the one thing I didn't like, I think I got the crowd back involved, but the one thing I didn't like was two things. One, this is where JR and King really start bickering with each other, and I mean to the point where they're not even focused on the match. Mm. And I say that because at the end of the match, he says something about, the Hollies win, and King makes a reference, and JR is like, well, what did Too Cool do? They didn't do anything in this match. I'm like, Scotty got an elimination, if not two. And, so they did stuff. I know you weren't paying attention because you were arguing about Austin, your friendship, and yada, yada. And you're calling King a dishonest person and having no friends and whatever they were yammering about. And you weren't paying attention, but I mean, you're literally insulting the fans at this point by saying that Too Cool did nothing in that match because before you really got into it, you saw Scotty get a pinfall.
Yeah.
So, From that point, the commentary just broke down completely for the rest of the show, and they were just arguing the entire time. And that's when I really wanted to mute this show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
Because it was just too much.
I don't blame you. Next match, the New Age Outlaws versus Mankind and Al Snow.
Okay, I got a question.
Okay.
JR kind of made a comment that Snow and Mankind were tag team champions at one point. That's true?
I guess so. I mean, I mean, JR's not the type to mention something like that without it being true.
I don't even remember them teaming. And I'm watching this match. I'm like, why are they? I know they were like, I think they were friends in real life, or they still are friends or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't figure out how this team came about. And I know they made reference to like the whole like toy issue with, you know, with Al Snow's figure getting like pulled off the shelves or something because of the PTC, or some kind of parent union.
Oh yeah, group. Yeah. I mean, I remember something about that, but I don't remember what the actual controversy was.
The controversy was they thought Head was a real person, and that he was carrying a decapitated head.
Oh my
god! And not a mannequin head.
Oh my god! Okay.
Yeah. So someone who didn't watch wrestling saw a.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I know. Well, I mean, him carrying around a mannequin head is stupid enough as it is. So
yeah,
they were kind of asking for that one. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, but this match was okay.
Yeah,
I can't say I expected more from it because Mankind, when he's in his like comedy world now, not his ultra serious, I'm gonna take out the Undertaker role. It was good.
Well, if you remember, they ended up, was it last Survivor Series? Yeah, it was Survivor Series 98. It was a deadly game. Was it Deadly Games? The one that was a tournament last year where Mankind faced Al Snow. And remember, Head had Socko wrapped around it.
It was Deadly Games.
Yeah. So that's, I guess that's how they became friends.
Sure. Let's go with that.
It was this. I don't know. I gave this like a C-. It was pretty decent until the chair got used. I didn't like the unnecessary chair use on the outside for no real reason. Road Dogg makes a pop-up comeback out of nowhere. Like, he's getting the crap beat out of him. And then all of a sudden, he's on his feet throwing lefts and rights at Mankind. Like, not even, like, he doesn't even do, like, a move to get Mankind down to gain the advantage to do it. He just literally just decides, oh, okay, I'm going to go on offense now.
Yep, adrenaline. It's a pure adrenaline rush move.
Yeah, well, it's dumb.
I'm not saying it.
There's an ice cold tag to Billy Gunn. At one point, JR asks if the New Age Outlaws are the greatest tag team ever, and I wanted.
Oh yeah, I was laughing at that. I'm like,
Wanted to, I don't know, slap him in the face, slap myself in the face. Put my head through a wall. I'm like, are you kidding me?
I mean, he could not have been, there was no way he was serious about that, right?
He says it again at the end of the match. There
or in this match? Because in this match, sure, they're probably the best tag team.
You know what? That was Vince. I'll guarantee you that was Vince in his fucking ear telling him to say that. I almost guarantee you that.
I can see that. I want to say JR has some integrity not to make that comment, but now it's making me think that their little squabble with him and the King was maybe real, and he was actually heated, so he was just saying whatever Vince told him and not even thinking about
it. Oh, no, I think it was real.
That's the only way. You do?
Oh, yeah. If they were working, it was a damn good work, because they're at the end of the towards the end of the pay-per-view, they were, like, heated.
Yeah, okay, that is true. I just don't know why they were mad at each other, though. That's the part I don't understand. I don't know why they got, you know, what buttons were pushed. I thought it was just them, you know, bantering back and forth and trying to, you know, be entertaining, I guess, in their mind.
King probably stepped over a line he didn't know he stepped over by questioning JR's friendship with Stone Cold.
Oh, God, give it a break, buddy.
You know, well, yeah, like...
The character work.
And no offense, but that's the same type of stuff that causes blood feuds in AEW.
True.
You're
yeah.
not my friend anymore. We used to be pals, and now you don't want to play video games with me. There's a cold tag to Foley again. The whole finish was nonsense. Like, it was just people running everywhere doing stuff. Finally, they hit the spike pile driver. I wrote Meltzer driver just to be funny. And the Outlaws retain. The more I watch the New Age Outlaws, the more I think, my God, Billy Gunn just carried Road Dogg for so long.
Yeah.
Because Billy Gunn Which is so weird. Good. And Road Dogg is so just not, you know. I mean, he can sell well if he's actually selling, but his offense is basically like three moves.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, and Billy Gunn can work.
Yes, so. He can. Especially in a tag team. Oh. But, you know, no disrespect to the Road Dogg. I loved him as a character, and he comes from an amazing family. But it makes me so mad that somehow he is the one out of all the Armstrongs that made it big.
Yeah.
I will, you know, I am a Brad Armstrong loyalist. I have loved that guy since I first saw him wrestle. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it always irritated me that he was never used properly. And back when I was watching wrestling when I was, you know, a kid, I knew it was kind of fake. I knew it was scripted. But every time he came out there, I was like, okay, he's going to win here.
Yeah.
He has to win now. They have to give him a win finally. And I was, you know, like, even though I knew he had the, you know, the quote unquote jobber entrance or that he was going up against Goldberg, I'm like, no, he's going to pull off a victory. Something's going to happen that makes this guy win because he is so talented that he has to, someone's going to see it.
Oh, yeah.
And not Brad, but Brian. Just because he could string together a few rhyming words that someone wrote for him, because if he was good at this, the stuff that he came up with, the stuff that he would say in TNA would have made more sense, because all his catchphrases were garbage in TNA.
Mm-hmm.
Or ripoffs of what he used to say.
Yep.
So, you know, no, I like them as a wrestler. I like them as a personality. But it just infuriates me that he was the popular Armstrong.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I completely agree with you. But I think Brad Armstrong, and hear me out here. Well, Brad Armstrong had behind the scenes issues too.
Really? He seemed like he was such a nice guy.
Yeah. I think his issues might have been. I don't know. I don't know what his issues were. All I've heard is that he had behind the scenes issues, and that's it. So I don't want to speculate because I don't want to. You know, badmouth a guy who's no longer with us and was a phenomenal talent. But Brad Armstrong is like an Arn Anderson or a Cesaro, or he's a good hand, and that's all most people see him as is a good guy. You know, a good wrestler. He can really work, and it infuriates me with that because this is something I'll talk about. Well, I'm going to go ahead and talk about it now. And the AEW thing, yes, the Ring of Honor is a dead promotion with no television. So those championships don't mean a damn thing. They might as well just be carrying around the cardboard championship that I created for myself when I was 10, because that's as much as they fucking mean. However, having Cesaro lose clean in the middle of the ring fucking 52-year-old Chris Jericho so that he could hold the fucking Ring of Honor World Championship belt is stupid.
Yep.
And it pisses me off because Cesaro's the one guy that I was like, man, he could actually, like, they could actually elevate him and really do something with him outside of what they did in WWE. And no, he's exactly where he fucking was the whole time in WWE, a jobber to the stars, an eternal mid-carder. And it's like, well, why the fuck did he even leave WWE then? You know, but that's me. Maybe
I am 100% agreement with you. I mean, that's how I feel about it. I didn't see the match. I saw the final. I saw the final moments on like YouTube or on Twitter, I guess. I don't know where it was hosted, but I was like, I was watching it. And I'm like, what was the point of this? Jericho doesn't need this title. I mean, Cesaro could use a better title, but taking it off him to put it on Jericho, for what purpose did this serve?
I mean, Cesaro, in all honesty, should be feuding with Wardlow for the fucking TNT championship and not even bothering with this, but whatever. Maybe that's what they're going to do next. Yeah. Which, that would be a great program. Of course, Cesaro's not going to go over because, you know, Wardlow, but anyway, moving on to our main event. Triple H versus The Rock versus Big Show. This is the most anticlimactic surprise ever. When the first time I watched this and Big Show was the fucking third person, I was just like, what? Really?
I never understood why they picked Big Show.
Like, it's like, has there ever been like, and I'm sorry, other than when he's like super hot baby face, has there ever been a Big Show match that people have been like, man, I got to see that Big Show match. I got to see what's going to happen there. You know,
I mean, when I the only Big Show match I ever watched again was when he was doing that whole impersonation thing, when he was the Showster. That was, mildly entertaining.
I don't even remember.
And that. Then I should say, as you know, as the Giant, I've watched him fall off the, the arena in that, not tow truck match. I don't know what you call it. Monster truck match.
Oh,
those were the only two matches I've ever watched of Paul White in a replay form.
I have watched the, I will say, and I always get a kick out of it, the Big Show, Big Show, Brock Lesnar, no holds barred match, where Brock Lesnar knocks out Big Show but can't lift him up to get him back to the ring, so he puts him on a forklift and drives the forklift down to the ring and dumps him in.
Oh yeah,
that's great. Also, when Brock Lesnar broke the ring by superplexing Big Show onto it, because I was watching that live. We were watching, I think that was SmackDown. And I was like, that's the first time I'd ever seen a ring break. And I was like, holy shit, that was so cool. Now it's like, you know, you got to lift the, you got to flip the ring over for people to be like, that was so cool. Oh, and Brock Lesnar did that too. So let's see. They're in the ring less than 5 minutes before going to the floor. There's a people's elbow that Triple H breaks up. I wrote, this would have been a better match as just The Rock versus Triple H.
Yeah.
That would have been such a better match. More fighting on the floor, and more fighting on the floor. Big Show was virtually a non-factor for most of the match. Oh, by the way, they're still on the floor. Show goes through an announce table.
That's typical WWE main event in the Attitude Era.
Now they're fighting into the crowd. I tuned out. I zoned out for a while. The ref goes down. Shane McMahon comes out. I wrote, this is a very confusing finish. DX comes out. And then Vince comes out. And then Big Show wins. And the crowd goes, huh? Really?
Yeah.
Because there was no reaction to that at all. It was just like, huh? And we never found out who ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin.
No, not until months later, which made no sense. And here's,
why did Rikishi do it?
Oh, he did it for The Rock. He did it for the people. But in doing it for The Rock, Rock didn't win the world title. Rock got put in a three-way match against Triple H on the Big Show. And who comes out as the winner in that? The Big Show. So yeah, good job.
Nobody came out as the winner of that match. Not the fans.
Big Show got his title.
Well, yeah, he got a title. That's true.
Oh, I don't know if we talked about this. We might have, but I remember the only reason it made somewhat sense. And I will get into it a little bit. Okay, so first off, with the driver being Rikishi, it made sense only because King says, "Oh, the driver must have been blonde," and I think that was a blonde joke. But you know, Rikishi is blonde, so good job. He caught a detail, and they ran with it. But here's why the whole "I did it for the Rock, I did it for the people." Great white hype or whatever he would say. I can't remember what the whole reason was, but basically it came down to time for a Samoan to be a world champion. That was Rikishi's justification, and he couldn't do it with all these white people in the way. So he took out one of the leads. But here's my problem with the whole thing. For his plan to have gone down, he would have had to have been working with Triple H, which he wasn't. He would have had to had Triple H. He would have had to know that Triple H would have fought Austin in the parking lot at that exact moment when he was in the car, so that he could speed up and hit him. And the problem with that is, in his explanation on Raw months after, when Mick Foley finds out who did it, he says he was walking by and saw the Rock's keys and picked it up and saw Austin and jumped in the car. But that's not how it happened on the pay-per-view. That's not the car was already there, eyeing Austin down.
He didn't jump out of the Rudy Tootie car.
They had no idea who the driver was going to be, and then they threw together a very illogical answer, because why not?
The amount of suspension of disbelief breaks your mind on that. It's like people love Independence Day, and I hate that movie because there's so many just stupid coincidences, like that Will Smith's character punches an alien out and then drags it and then goes to save his takes a helicopter to go save his wife, who just so happens to be with the president's wife, you know, so that they can fly back so she can die with the president and die in the president's arms. And then Jeff Goldblum's character, the aliens are running MS-DOS.
He writes a perfectly good virus.
Yeah. You know, and then not only that, but then he pukes on Air Force One, but somehow is fine on interstellar space travel,
where they're going upside down.
It smokes a cigar afterwards.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Come on. Give me a break.
It was just fun for the special effects.
Oh yeah.
That was it.
So, all right. We'll try and get through this as quickly as possible, because I don't want to get too into it. But I did want to. Oh, by the way, I gave the pay-per-view a D overall, which.
Okay, I gave it a C, and this is the only reason why. I like a show that has an overarching story happening. Okay. I should say C-. I don't like there was no finish to that story until many months later, but I liked how, you know, it kept you invested. If this had been a Monday Night Raw or a Thursday Night SmackDown, I probably would have given it a higher grade, because, you know, it's like, ooh, it's, you know, it's got you coming in, you know, it's got you paying attention. But this is a pay-per-view, and, you know, this should be the culmination of storylines, not a weird start to one.
We start to a storyline that goes nowhere until months.
Exactly.
Later.
Yeah, that has no real logic to it, because the only people who are going to see this story are the people who bought into it already. It's not like you can have people come in, turn the channel onto USA or whatever channel it was back then, and tune in. It's already happening. So come up with an ending. You know, it's like that whole egg thing that Vince was doing a couple months ago with Theory and everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, it's nice to have it's good to have that story to keep people wanting to figure out, well, what's the whole mystery? What's that MacGuffin supposed to be? But, you know, it doesn't really belong in a pay-per-view.
Bring me my egg.
But, you know, I liked the effort there. So that's why I said C-. Because the matches were okay. I mean, it was better than what you expected for that era.
No, no. Yeah. Well, it was better than SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Of the same year, because that SummerSlam was abysmal. So yeah, I gave it a D overall. AEW drama. Of course, everybody knows by now about the thing with the Bucks and CM Punk, and they got into a fight and all of that. Apparently, CM Punk is not going to be wrestling for AEW ever again, and is going to have his contract bought out, as per Wrestling Insider earlier today. I don't have a problem with this.
I do.
Why is that?
Because if he's going to wrestle anymore, and I really hope Triple H doesn't hire him. He's a free agent now. That scares me. Yeah. Where is he going to work if he wants to work anymore?
He doesn't want to work anymore. I don't think he wanted in AEW.
I hope he stays far away from wrestling. I really do. But it scares me that he's now free. Because maybe, Triple H sees... I mean, I feel like if Vince was still in power, there's money to be made somehow. How he's very forgiving of, he put his differences aside with Warrior, with Hogan, and all these other guys. I feel like if Vince was involved, this would be, let's put our differences aside and make some magic, Punk. But I'm hoping Triple H and Stephanie are much more level-headed and don't want to bring somebody that toxic there. But I don't know them yet. I don't know their business strategy, especially in light of the fact that they've brought in a bunch of, people that Vince released. So I hope they don't bring him in, but I don't have enough evidence to say they won't. And that's what scares me, because I do not want him on my TV. I will gladly watch. If I can make a deal with God, I will say I will watch AEW religiously, like I do Raw and SmackDown, if that means Punk is not on WWE. Put him in Japan. Put him in TNA.
Put him nowhere. He has no more. He has no business in the wrestling industry.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He needs to be far away. Let him go back to his wife and just live a very private life, and everybody will be happy. He will be happy. I will be happy.
He doesn't like
wrestling
other
fans in general will be happy. The only ones who will be mad are AEW fans who were gushing over the fact that their savior was back in in ring, and that's great. Good for them. But I mean, if they want to, if they're going to be upset, that's fine. They're a small minority. I don't care.
Well, if I'm Triple H, I don't see why you bring in a guy who seems to be injured like every month or two, has a horrible attitude that Triple H didn't get along with when he was there. I don't see what the upside is. And you don't need Punk.
WWE
doesn't need Punk. They got Roman Reigns. They got Seth freaking Rollins. They got Cody coming back at Royal Rumble. They don't need Punk. What do they need Punk for? What do they need a 42-year-old, miserable, self-proclaimed beat-up old man? Which I love what Kevin Nash had to say about that, by the way. Kevin Nash in the ring at 55 with, knees popping all over the place. And he's like, Punk's beat up from working one day a week. Which he hasn't even done for the past 6 months. But anyway, all of that. Yeah, they had the thing. They put the belt on Moxley. Which, if MJF's going to cash in that chip, he needs to do it now. Because that's the only reason to put the belt on Moxley. If not, I still think you should have. If I was booking it, I'd put the belt on Danielson, have MJF cash in and injure Wardlow. You take Wardlow off TV for a little while so that maybe people forget about the fucking screw job you've done with his momentum, and let MJF hold the title, make Danielson a heel again, and let him be a heel that doesn't want to defend the title. That way you protect him from injury as long as you can. Moxley wanted to go on vacation. There's plenty of other stuff you can do with the tag team division. Maybe you could actually get FTR to have an actual tag team match on your fucking television show. Anyway. But yeah, and MJF would make a great TNT champion and would be the perfect, obnoxious heel champion that you need in the mid-card to, bounce baby faces off of.
Yeah,
you know.
I agree.
But yeah, you,
but I would like to see him as you know, I don't think he's as great a heel as people think he is. I mean, all he's doing is really just insulting people, and that's that's just insulting people. That's being a bully. It's not a heel. But you know, if he's going to be this pillar of AEW, you know, he's you know, it's like when WCW finally put the belt on Scott Steiner.
Yeah,
he was the credible choice, and he could get over, and he was popular with the fans. Put on MJF, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't need another Mox run. We don't need a Jericho run. Danielson would be nice if he stays healthy. And I'm, you know, I always cringe when he's in the ring because I know he's on borrowed time at this point with the workers of AEW.
Yeah, especially that. That's the biggest thing. That's why when they, you know, and then also, you know, they bring in Paige, the girl with the balsa wood neck, like that. That's not going to end well. I'm sorry. It's not. It already ended poorly in WWE. You know what I mean? Like, she's already had a comeback, and it did not go good.
No.
She had, what, one match and got re-injured. What the fuck are these girls in LA? What is, you know, what you put her in there with Athena, who just dropped Britt Baker on her neck and broke her nose?
Oh, God.
You put her in there with Ty Mello or whatever her name is, and she, you know, gets dropped on her head. Or
oh, that wasn't her though. That was Sammy messing up. Oh, big yeah, time. That was
Sammy. But I mean, regardless, well, though Ty dropped Ruby on her head too.
I don't know why
too.
I'm defending her, but
so
I you know, like, I'm not saying. I mean, someone who is experienced. If we're, you know, just thinking about her last injury, which came in a match with Sasha Banks.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that my initial reaction to seeing that, you know, was right. But I, you know, when I saw that, I was like, I was mad at Sasha. I don't know. You know, I've taken this stance of, you know, if anyone's to blame for an injury, it's both parties. Cause you know, you should know your limitations. You shouldn't be trying to hurt, you know, you shouldn't be taking moves that you feel you can't do or that you can't receive well, or that the other person feels they can't do properly. And where was I going with this? Oh, my biggest fear though is that it's not so much that someone like Jade or Britt Baker or Tay will injure Paige. It's that Paige will, you know, is not responsible enough to realize her limitations at this point. Because, you know, in their minds, I'm sure Athena and Britt Baker thought they could do that move.
Mm-hmm.
They probably should have had someone tell them, you know, they, you know, do that move a few times, see if you can get it down without, you know, hurting anybody, and go from there.
Yeah.
Assuming that's what they're going to do for Paige going forward, she has to, you know, whoever her opponent is and her have to be able to sit, be, you know, be an adult and say, this move isn't going to work. It's too dangerous. You said balsa wood, right? Your neck is balsa wood. It will snap when we do this. And we do not want that. It may look cool if we hit it perfect, but the odds of us hitting it perfect are 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 2. Is it worth a cool spot of this is awesome chance for a move that may permanently keep you out of the ring? Because you've already had that situation where WWE wouldn't clear you. Who's to say, you know, I mean, obviously they did it for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
You may be on borrowed time here. So, you know, I hope both, you know, whoever her opponent is and her can be mature enough to say, we don't need to do this move.
We'll see.
We don't need to do this spot. I don't see it happening, and I honestly feel the producers over at AEW do not care enough to step in. Otherwise, you would have never seen that spear off a cherry picker onto the concrete floor for with Matt Hardy. I don't think they care. So that's why I'm very afraid for her.
I think it. You also there's a couple of points then I want to bounce off of, and then one more thing I want to get to, and then we'll wrap everything up. Big E got a career-ending injury on a very basic move that almost everybody does, an overhead German suplex.
Yeah.
I mean, he under-rotated on the move. That type of stuff happens. It's wrestling. It's a physical sport. So that type of injuries are going to happen. Even if you do everything perfect every time, it doesn't matter. Stuff's still going to go haywire, you know? So every bump you take is one step closer to, you know, the end of your bump card anyway.
Right.
There's also a reason why. Okay, look at the people who came back from neck injuries. Nikki Bella came back, did what, 2 or 3 matches? That was it. Edge came back. He's done a lot of matches, but Edge knows how to protect himself. Edge is a 40-something-year-old man who is very mature, knows the business, can work a style that doesn't put him in a lot of danger, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Daniel Bryan left WWE because he wanted to do stuff that WWE wouldn't let him do with his neck injury. That's why Paige is there, is because they wouldn't, you know, WWE wouldn't clear her, which means that she wanted to do stuff she can't do,
which is wrestle.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. She should not, she has no business. I know it's her life. I know it's her passion. I get it. But I mean, there are so many wrestlers out there who didn't reach the level of fame Paige had, or even Daniel Bryan had. And they've taken, you know, other roles in the business. Like, I am sure Kurt Angle's son, you know, would love, I can't remember his name. What is Jason Jordan?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure he would love to be wrestling again, but he's producing now because he knows he can't, his physical limitations won't allow him to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's decided to take on a production role in some capacity. I can't remember what it is now.
He's a match agent.
Yeah, Ken Doan, I think. You know, Kenny Dykstra, but his name, mm-hmm. I think that's his name. I think, but he was talented.
Yeah,
he's doing the same thing because of injuries and just, you know, time. Yeah. And his, you know, I'm assuming he recognizes there are physical limitations. There are ways she can give back to the wrestling world, and she hasn't. I don't know why she hasn't. I don't know why during her entire, you know, contracted tenure with WWE that she hasn't done that. Maybe she hasn't been approached, or maybe she just flat out rejected the idea. Because in her mind, if she accepts that role, she's hanging up her boots for good.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it was me, I would be like, my health, my welfare, my well-being isn't worth this. But then I'm thinking, as I'm saying this to you, there are people out there who are like, you know, who are so obsessed with their art, and wrestling is art, that they're willing to do all these sacrifices to make it, where it's not about the money, where it's not about the, you know, doing it in front of 40,000 people, 50,000 people at a WrestleMania. They'll be gladly to do it in a bingo hall,
mm-hmm.
again, you know, for 14 people. And that for some reason that brings them so much joy, and that, you know, good for them. But I think for her, she needs to recognize that this is, maybe she has already, maybe she's already gone through this debate in her head, but you know, for the people outside looking in, this is, it's scary. Yeah. I'm scared for her. I'm a big Paige fan,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to see her hurt. I don't, and you know, I know this is an extreme feeling. I don't want to see another Canadian crippler issue ever again in this show I don't want to see
her in a wheelchair.
Yeah,
and that's really what I'm scared of.
I'm scared of all these things for these people, and you know, they bring us so much entertainment, a lot of joy. I mean, they're my way of just, you know, relaxing after a busy work week, pop in some wrestling and just enjoy the matches. And to see them, you know, unable to walk or have these, you know, CTE or just, you know, brain damage. That's, you know, that's not something I want on anybody. And, you know, I feel like for me, I'm obviously not speaking for her or, you know, telling her what to do. I just feel like she's taking a huge risk for God only knows what reason.
Yeah. And might I say, very little reward as far as AEW goes. Okay, enough AEW. I want to talk about something I'm excited about. Sure. NXT has been on fire lately. I don't know if you watch NXT at all, but the influx of the NXT UK talent, now that NXT UK is defunct and they're building up NXT Europe somewhere. I don't know where the performance center or all of that's going to be. I don't think they even do yet. I'm pretty sure that that's why they let a bunch of the people go, is because they're like, go work, you know, do your craft while we get everything set up and we'll bring the majority of you guys back. Because I have a feeling there's a lot of guys they're going to bring back that they let go. Trent Seven, even if they just have him in a behind-the-scenes role, you've got to get Trent Seven back. But Tyler Bate, JD McDonagh, now you got Ilya Dragunov, all of them fighting over who's going to face Bron Breakker. I even said it on Twitter the other day, the number one contenders match between Bate and JD McDonagh, which I still want to call him Jordan Devlin, but JD McDonagh was so good that it drew Bron Breakker in. Like, literally every time they would put the camera on him, because he's there at the announce desk watching it, he just had this like amazed look on his face, like he couldn't believe how good the guys in the ring were. And then late in the match, there was a false finish or a really long two count, and he popped for it. He was like, oh wow, you know what I mean? Like, it made him a fan as opposed to the champion sitting there watching the thing. So that's how good these guys are, and they've done nothing but elevate everybody they've been in the ring with since they've been there. It's a really good time to be a fan of NXT, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it as 2.0. I thought it was very entertaining, and now that we're seeing all these NXT UK come in, it's a whole new ball game. It's NXT in its original form when, you know, Ciampa was there and Gargano. That was my favorite show to watch when it went to 2.0. I still watched it, but I wasn't as heavily invested. But now that we're getting all these amazingly talented individuals.
They're veterans. These people have been doing this for, you know, 10, 15 years.
They're not rookies.
So the
it elevates the entire brand, and I'm for it. I love watching it.
The match quality has gone up exponentially since they've been there. The anytime Pretty Deadly's in the ring, they make whoever they're in the ring with look like a million bucks. Tyler Bate again, JD McDonagh, the Gallus boys. We haven't seen a lot of them yet, but they're really, really good. You know, I would like to see Kaylee Ray, Alba Fire, actually win the title without the use of a fucking baseball bat, which I still think is stupid because she's Scottish and they don't play baseball in Scotland, but whatever. But anyway, so yeah, I just wanted to talk about how I'm excited about NXT real quick, because I am, and I wanted to have a really good positive note here at the end of all of this.
Well, mission accomplished.
Next week, next Wednesday, or sometime around then, the next recorded episode of Back to the Ring will be, we're going to go back in time. We're going to do WCW from December 20th and 27th, 1986. So we'll get a little palate cleanser from these bad pay-per-views and watch some good wrestling. Apparently there's a Rick Rude and Manny Fernandez versus the Midnight Express tag team match on one of those episodes. So that should be for the titles. So that should be really good. If you're down with that.
I will do it.
Sweet.
It'll be better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always better. Well, and
I don't even have to know the card, and I'm assuming it'll be better because I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how you're picking these shows if you're going in like some timeline order that I haven't picked up on or paid attention to yet. But these pay-per-views, they're draining, man.
Oh no, I'm doing okay. So here's the story for all of you who might be new listeners. When I first got the WWE Network, this was back in 2016, I think. Yeah, around that era, because Seth was this was when Seth was having his feud with Sting, and the Shield. You know, Dean Ambrose was still really good, and people were still booing Roman. I went through and I watched every WrestleMania and every Royal Rumble back to back to back to back in chronological order. When I got, when I started writing for, Wrestling News World, which I don't even know if they're still around anymore, but I was writing for Wrestling News World, doing a retro review, I decided, well, I've already watched all of the early year pay-per-views, the two big ones, the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, which usually happen in the, you know, early in the year in the spring. Why don't I watch the two late of the year pay-per-views and I'll just review them in chronological order. So every SummerSlam and every Survivor Series, starting with, you know, the first one in, what was it, 89, I think, was the one of the first ones. Might have been even 86 or 87. But so that's what that's, you know, what I'm trying to do is do the SummerSlam and Survivor Series in chronological order from beginning until we get all the way to the end. It's just these Attitude Era ones have been so bad. Like, ever since, and it really is, ever since Bret Hart left, like, everything just went to complete shit. Like, it's so bad because there was no more wrestling on the show. It's all kick, punch, big move, kick, punch, big move. So, So that's why. And now the WCW stuff, I'm actually watching it in chronological order every episode because of starting when I actually started watching it as a child. So... Mm-hmm. Because we moved down to South Carolina in 86, the summer of 86. And that's when I started watching WCW because that's what it was. You know, we were in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. That's Jim Crockett promotion territory right there, you know. So that's when I pretty much, I didn't stop watching WWF, but I stopped liking WWF as much because the WCW Jim Crockett promotion stuff was just, it was real. You know what I mean? Like, it felt real. It didn't have the big budget, but it felt like they were actually. Okay. Felt like they were actually going at it. But anyway, okay, moving on. I got to sign off. I got stuff to do. So you can find us on Twitter at Back to the Ring or me on Twitter at Back to the Ring. You can find Rob at The Real Rob Pinoy. Is that right?
The Real Pinoy Rob.
Real Pinoy Rob. There you go. On Twitter. And if you're interested in the LWF, pay attention to the at Back to the Ring Twitter account. You can find all the information on that. I think this has been a good episode. In the words of the great Tully Blanchard, it's been your pleasure. Good night.